Town Detroit, recording live. Prepare yourself for a hoppy drive. If you're chilling at home, pop that crowler and just kick back for the next 2 hours. It's the end of the week, so here's to the weekend. It's Better on Draft with Rob, Matt, Nick, and Ken.
And we are live, episode 220, Better on Draft podcast. My name is Ken, and again, we are stuck at home. So we are drinking, we are having fun, we are doing what we do best, and is trying to bring some entertainment to this Friday night. Now, some of our fans up in the UP, as well as Northern Michigan, may be out and about at the bars already, but for those of you stuck at home, welcome. We hope you are enjoying your stay, and let's kind of go around real quick and see what everyone is drinking. Nicholas!
What up?
You weren't ready.
No, I wasn't, but that's okay.
Okay. We still like it.
It's live. What do you expect? We've been doing this work from home thing or studio from home thing.
I have no idea. Days and weeks blend together, but let's start off with the first question. Are you still employed?
I'm still employed.
People still need electricity.
Yeah.
What are you drinking over there?
Well, in typical Nick fashion, double fisting. Still working on this UFO fall pack from Harpoon. I got the UFO raspberry. I had that last week. And I didn't have this one last week. It is the UFO Dan pumpkin, your favorite.
Dan loves the pumpkin.
Oh, Jesus. What are you doing? It's like May. Why are you drinking a pumpkin beer?
Well, because the only other beer that I have is this wheat stuff, and then everything else is like 15%. So,
Well, what's wrong with that?
Hold on. UFO, but
well, and you're. Oh boy! I'm just gonna shut up and drink.
All right,
stop trying to justify it.
Well, damn, Nick is shutting up and drinking. Rob, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going?
What are you drinking, and are you still employed?
I am still doubly employed. Have both of them. Those are going as you would expect, as you know, keeping me busy. And definitely, as the weather has been starting to turn, is making this house a bit warmer. And having to make sure I get this AC checked before we catch on fire.
Yeah.
I wonder how much it costs to like cool that huge ass house down.
Yeah, I mean, it would. There's a couple of things that luckily I can do with shutting some of the rooms off that don't necessarily need it. And yeah, just pretty much doing that and trying to put insulation where it can best go. So it's just kind of you take it as you can.
How big is your house, Rob?
It's about roughly 2,450 square feet.
Okay.
So, realistically, how old is your house, though?
Yeah, that too.
let's see. My house is 84.
Yeah. I know that feeling from living in Ferndale all those years. Yeah. Not that big. I mean, 2,400 is a decent size, but cooling it's different if it's 80 years old.
Right.
Yeah. For a second, I thought you said it was made in 84, and I'm like, that didn't make sense.
I'm going to interrupt to say my house is 101 years old.
Nice.
Ooh. Centennial. Well, you see the video if you're listening on the podcast, which you can find on plnk.to/BOD, or if you just search Better on Draft on any podcast. As well as if you're seeing the video, you can see him. We'll get to him in just a minute. But, Rob, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a Junie from Transient.
All right.
You're not drinking meth?
Oh no! I still got cans of meth downstairs.
Okay,
I decided.
I just figured I'd ask.
Yeah,
Dan,
no.
Dan, you're next on the list. Are you? Are you still gainfully employed?
I am. Yeah. In fact, we're busier than I can even manage at times. But yeah, still employed.
Well, that's a good thing. And what are you drinking out there in Arizona?
You know, I'm pulling a Nick, doing the double fist. Yeah, I've got a Dragon's Milk. Haven't really hit that yet. Been drinking this Claymore from Great Divide. It's a Scottish ale. really good. 7.7% doesn't taste like it. Probably why I've drank half the can already in 15 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wendy, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
More importantly, how's Grandma?
She is good. She's napping in the other room.
All right. Are you still employed?
I am. It's been a crazy week with the weather changing because I'm the person who can help you keep cool that house down.
There you go.
One of my many jobs at my place of employment is social media. And I learned that today is National Drink a Paloma Day. So I am starting off with a Paloma.
A what?
Paloma.
Paloma.
I just juiced some grapefruit. I'm going to make one tonight.
Yep. It's tequila and grapefruit juice topped off with a little tonic water. It's delicious. And then we were talking last week about about the old staples and the OGs in Michigan, and I couldn't help but grab a Koonin's White Devil.
I saw the White Devil over at, I believe, Nick's over here in Ypsilanti, but I was looking for a Rochester Mills beer because yesterday, myself, Rob, as well as our writers, Ed, and former host, Matt, all hopped on to talk to Michael Weber, representative over in Rochester Hills, talking about the open intox law that he put into Congress, trying to get signed and pushed through, which we'll talk about during segment two. For me, guys, I am drinking an Electron Brown. Because when I went to Kroger to pick up the milkshake, I saw that. So, of course, the other beer I'm drinking is an Electron Brown. So we will be drinking that today. I decided to bring up my own little Better on Draft glass. Looks amazing with a dark beer, I must say.
Oh, it really does.
But you heard his voice, but let's introduce our guests. Why don't you... well, I would ask what you're drinking and if you're still employed, but we know the answer to the second question. So what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Bell's Two Hearted Ale.
There you go.
And I am doing good. But I used to be employed at this place back in the very early 90s. So when Two Hearted was created, I was there and a part of it. So it was fun.
Well, you, why don't you tell us your name and I guess the last place you were working at?
I'm Dan Kiplinger, and the last place I worked at was Old Peninsula Brew Pub.
And that's
and
in
I
Kalamazoo.
Worked there for, yeah, I'm in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and worked there for a very long time. I was in my 17th year, and then I was no longer employed there. They decided to move in a different direction, and so I'm on the free market.
Well, you mentioned that you had been working for Bell's in the 90s. When did you actually start brewing?
I started brewing in my dorm room at Michigan State in 1990 and got away with it for a long time. I was in Holmes Hall, 561 West Holmes Hall. I was a Briggsy. I went to Lyman Briggs and did it for a while until they figured out where the smell was coming from.
How did you manage making beer inside a dorm room?
It was actually quite easy. We had a suite, and our suite mates smoked weed all the time, so I learned the wet towel under the door thing from them, and you weren't supposed to have hot plates, but I had three, and I would boil everything right there in the window with the fan blowing out, and everyone would be screaming, where's that smell coming from? But I wouldn't say a word, and I only got busted because someone was drinking my beer and turned me into the RA.
What?
What a snitch.
I know. I'm terrible.
That is a horrible thing to do, for sure. So you were brewing in your dorm room, Holmes Hall. When did you get your first actual brewing job?
Actually I got my first brewing job the day I turned 21 from, Larry Bell. He had hired me earlier, and then when we were doing this is back when there was like six of us. So he was actually writing stuff down in his office and, you know, how old are you? And, you know, what's your birthday? And I wasn't 21 yet for a couple months. And he's like, come back when you're 21. So I started when I was 21 years old as a Bell's employee, and within, you know, cleaned the kegs, did the stuff, and within a year I was brewing on the 15-barrel system, which actually just had got installed when I started there. They were doing a 2-barrel soup pot, and then they went to the 15-barrel, and then while I was there, we went to a 30-barrel also.
What was – do you remember the first beer you brewed there?
No.
No? That was a lot of beers ago?
It wasn't anything spectacular. I mean, we brewed beer. Everyone always thinks it's always like, oh, amazing stuff all the time. But, yeah, it was just – it could have been amber ale. Who knows?
I mean, I have a soft spot for Bell's Amber. That is my there used to be a bar in Royal Oak I used to go to all the time, and that was my go-to during $2 Tuesdays.
Oh, wait. Oh, I know what you're – wait, are you talking about Luna?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought so.
Say, I only know $2 Tuesdays at one place in Royal Oak that you went to a lot, Ken, and I than Luna.
I can't tell you how many Bell's Two Hearted and Bell's Ambers that I used to drink over there. That was probably my favorite go-to beer, because my introduction to craft beer, I always tell people, was Killian's. So Amber Ale was a really good next step. As well as
it was mine too.
Yeah, Eric the Red over at
it was mine too. I got a fun story about Killian's.
Well, let's tell it. Let's tell your story.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Eric.
So when I came back from Michigan State to Kalamazoo in the summer, I rented an apartment because my parents didn't want me home.
Okay.
And my 19th birthday, I had a half barrel of Killian's in the in the shower, and. That was, I mean, I'm going to basically age myself right now. This was 1991, and it was the best beer that you could get at that time. And I'm embarrassed that I had a barrel of Killian's, because they had changed from ale to lager and then to food coloring and everything by then. But anyway, so I had Killian's too, so.
So you went from, did you go straight from Bell's to Old Peninsula? Cause you were at Old Peninsula for 17 years, 16 years.
Yeah. I started Old Peninsula at the end of, 2003, I think.
How long has that brewery been around for, or brew pub?
They had another brewer for the first 7 years there. 1996, St. Patrick's Day was when they opened. I actually worked at another brewery in between Bell's and Old Peninsula, called Mystic Brewing Company. It was in Kalamazoo. It only lasted about a year and a half. But that was a really, really cool experience, because basically he bought a used 3-barrel system from DME, and it was dropped off in a, you know, by semi, like, here's your stuff. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear. Here's your shit, you know.
You can swear.
Yeah,
and
this is
yeah.
We put it together on your own.
We on Facebook, we can't even show up on people's feeds unless they're 21 and up. So we have to be at least a 21 and up show, 18 right. and up on YouTube. So it doesn't matter. Like, we're just, it's one of those things to where you just have to accept the fact that you'll swear. This is no theology on tap type of show. We are vulgar and, well, Dan's a little edgelord, but you know.
Oh, Jesus. anyways,
what was your favorite beer to brew over at anywhere? Like, what was your favorite, like, you know, the brew day, you look at the list and you see what you're brewing, you're like, oh my God, I love this day.
I can answer that for sure. Back at Bell's, there were, when we started getting rolling, you know, in the early 90s, there were beers that were awesome to brew. And those awesome beers to brew suck to brew, and a lot of guys didn't like to do them, namely old ale. I mean, there was a lot of work to them. We would use a little – we had to add 10-15% of malt extract into that kettle, and you had to warm it ahead of time, and it was painstaking. It took a long time, but I loved those beers. I was one of the two guys, Rob Scala and I were the only guys that actually brewed outside of that place. Everybody else was kind of like, you know, brought in and trained how to make beer on the system. So we were really into making beers for the sake of making cool beers. So I loved when I got a chance to make the good ones. And it turned out at the end of my tenure, I was making all the good ones. Partly because no one else wanted to deal with that shit, but I didn't care. I was like, I want to make the old Third Coast Old Ale. I want to make the Bells, you know, all the crazy stouts and everything else that we did down there. So those I loved. And, you know, making it, it's kind of like mowing your lawn, maybe, you know, it sucks, but when it's done, it's awesome. So that's the way I looked at it. You know, you make the good stuff that makes people happy, and that's what it's all about.
I am a huge fan of old ales, and that just makes me appreciate them even more. Like what Nick was saying about, you know, having cans of meth that's from Brooks Brewing, their Methuselah 969, and that is their old ale, and I absolutely enjoy it. So stuff like that with beers like that, sound like they are much tougher to make, that that just, like I said, just makes me want to, you know, appreciate them a little bit more.
What was your first beer then that you had? Because obviously you were talking about like Killian's and brewing in Michigan State, but Michigan State's more known for their dirty 30s, not a craft beer haven.
Hey, so true. Not when I was there. So people have asked me this too. And I think back, like when I was exploring new beers, it was the Löwenbräu that was from Switzerland, I think. There was Löwenbräu that was made from Miller, and there was Löwenbräu Dark that was like imported. And that was like the most exotic beer I could get. And then there was the Guinness. You know, you guys are all young, so I'm the old guy, and there wasn't that much to choose from. I mean, it was really tough, and we would love to go on trips to Chicago to go to what was Sam's Liquor, there in North Chicago, because they would have some Belgian stuff. And yeah, it was really tough. So I guess my first beer that I thought was awesome was probably like Löwenbräu, the Swiss Löwenbräu Dark.
I don't know if I said most first awesome beer. I mean, first beer. Everyone's got to remember their first beer.
Oh, first beer? Shit. It was probably my dad's Miller Lite when I was
in high school. There you go.
I remember first beer for me was, I think it was Labatt Blue, to be honest with you.
Budweiser, I was five.
You were five? Sure, go whole Budweiser. Are we talking a sip?
Well, if we're talking back, you know, I think there is a picture of me taking a sip out of my dad's PBR when he was painting houses in the summer. He was a teacher.
Nice.
So that'd be my first, I guess.
I mean, probably my first beer was Bud Light or Budweiser because it was a red can and I thought it was a Coke. But wow. Like my first beer definitely was probably a Miller or a Coors Light, because I think that was the beer at the time and with the people I was hanging out with when I was 16.
Yeah, I know those people. That's terrible, Ken.
You are that person.
Wait, oh, what, did I bring that?
I was going to say, you know, isn't one of them kind of on this show, Ken?
So, you know, you've been brewing in Michigan for 20-plus years. You've seen the ebbs and flows, the last craft beer kind of. You know, what has your experience been? Obviously, Old Peninsula has been going on for 24 years, based on the math that you gave me. You know, and it's, you know, they're still going on. We're in this really weird age of time right now. But let's take COVID aside. Like, what have you seen? Like, what has it gotten you excited to continue to brew through all these years?
It's only the people.
The people.
I mean, the people that like the beer. I mean, I can – Old Peninsula was always overlooked in town. We didn't have any – taps. We didn't have any distribution. If you didn't come to the place, you didn't know what our beer was. But at the beer festivals, you know, I'd bring my six best beers and we would have lines as long as Founders. And that was like, that just reinvigorated me. Like, yes, this is worth it. This is awesome. People like it. And in Madison, Wisconsin, we've been going to Madison. Old Peninsula had been going since they opened, but I had my first Madison Great Taste of the Midwest was in 1992 with Bell's. And so I continued that. And my wife and I actually were the two of us brought the beer to Madison every year for Old Peninsula. And we did it. It's a long trip, you know, no expenses paid. It's a brew pub, but it was a labor of love. And we would again enjoy tons of people coming up and talking about how they remembered us and wanted to try our beers every year. And that's it. That's it. Really. That's it. Just the people that appreciated what you do. You do it all the time. You don't always get thank yous. So when people come back up and they live in Minnesota or whatever, especially Great Taste Midwest, right? Because we got everyone coming in like, we love your beer and we love your ghost pepper beer and that kind of stuff. That just helped, you know, make it work for the next 6 months when it didn't seem like anyone really cared in Kalamazoo. So we have a ton of breweries open up and we were often overlooked.
So I'm actually, I recall I went to Old Peninsula. I looked on, you know, the whatever map I was looking at that time. I think Kalamazoo had like a map of the local breweries. And I went to Old Peninsula 4 years ago. And I found the 8 beers that I had. So I want you to tell me if you made it or if you didn't. You ready?
If I made them or yeah, if I didn't?
If you made them. So is this your recipe or somebody else's?
Oh, I made them all.
I'm interested to see if mine's in there too.
But go ahead.
I was going to say white oak vanilla porter.
Oh, yeah. They're all my beers. Yeah.
Rockin' raspberry wheat.
Yep.
Pancakes and porter coffee ale.
Yes.
Wait, what? Ooh, you caught my attention.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. And talk to us about that one. What was that?
The beer pancakes all about? And porter is a great collaboration with Black Owl Cafe, Kalamazoo Coffee Company. They have a maple walnut coffee, and I approached them and asked them if they would be interested in letting me use some of their coffee in our beers, and they were more than happy. Garrett Krug is an amazing guy, and we talked about what we were going to try to do, and he gave me some samples, and I ended up basically putting his maple. It's, I think his brand name is Moonlight, and you can find that in Michigan. The maple walnut coffee with my vanilla porter just was amazing. And then, are you going to say pancakes and hot pants for your next best favorite one?
What's that one?
Is the maple walnut vanilla porter with ghost pepper.
Oh, I definitely wouldn't have had that.
I'd drink that.
With a piece of bacon in the glass, which gives it a smokiness that you will just not.
That's amazing.
Understand.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You know what's really crazy is I'm looking at this list because your flights were flights of 8. And out of also like I had gingerbread porter, midnight stout, sunset red, stout chocula, and vanilla porter. Minus like the wheat beer. And like I didn't have any. I had all dark beers. That's a ridiculous lineup that I didn't have an IPA and 8 beers.
Yeah. That's amazing, actually.
Yeah, I have a lot of dark beers. And actually, some people who, you know, we're halfway between Detroit and Chicago, and a lot of people from who are passing through on 94 stop in. And I hear people every once in a while say, thank you for having so many dark beers. And we had 16 taps, and I would say without a doubt there would be at least 7 of them that were dark. And that just doesn't happen anymore. Everything's IPA this, IPA that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I love IPAs. And I had maybe 6 or 7 more IPAs. And wood IPAs were my favorites. But, you know, you can't diss the dark beer.
Agreed. Yeah. What do you think is probably one of the biggest issues surrounding brew pubs right now within the state?
I don't know. I can't answer that only because brew pubs are, they're far and few between. It's kind of like people don't even realize if they're brew pubs or not. Since the microbreweries were able to have restaurants and still distribute, it's kind of, you know, convoluted. If you know what I mean, if you named some brew pubs, which I don't know if you even could, because who knows who's a brew pub and who's a microbrewery.
We actually had Nick, the brewer from Black Lotus, on a couple times, and he is a huge pro brew pub cheerleader. So he always talks about, you know, trying to get more for the brew pubs so that brew pubs can do more. Obviously, Black Lotus is no more, so he's no longer at Black Lotus. But like we've known enough about the brew pubs and the capabilities or non-capabilities that the brew pubs have, because the rules that they can obviously bring in other beer, liquor, et cetera, but then they can't distro. But then there's the rule that they can distro only to the Brewers Guild festivals. There's so many different rules and regulations around it. I was just curious if you had, you know, not necessarily a wish list, but ideas and thoughts that could help the few brew pubs that are left, because it was probably better when there was only 80 breweries in the state. But now that we've got 400 plus, the rules are a little different. You know, the thoughts are a little different.
Yeah, I have said this to friends of mine. The brew pub advantage, which is what it was originally supposed to be. I apologize if that's my computer.
It's all good.
The brew pub advantage was initially, and this is back way back before maybe half of you were born, in the early, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, they made this.
He's talking to you, Ken.
They made this distinction of, you know, if you're a brew pub, you can have a classy liquor license, and you have to serve a certain amount of something. And if you're a microbrewery, you just have to distribute, and that's it. And then, of course, Larry worked on the legislature, and now you can have a microbrewery with a tap room and a restaurant and everything. So being a brew pub, and this is only my opinion, is a detriment. It's not a good thing anymore, because look at New Holland. You can not only have your own beer and a restaurant, but you can distill, you can have your own liquor drinks. You know, what did Old Peninsula have? What did any other brew pub have? They could bring in other spirits and make mixed drinks, but geez, they can't distribute. So, and I think that was the thing that I was like the most frustrated with. I wasn't really even frustrated, but that seemed to be the obvious thing when people would come up and be like, "Oh, this beer is great. How come I've never heard of you? Where are you on tap? I've never seen you on a store shelf." So these days, I would not recommend anybody get a brew pub license. And if anyone's, you know, championing I hate that word. Sorry.
So Nick, so
why'd you use it?
Nick wasn't a champion as much as he was. Hey, we have a lot of brew pubs. Let's
No. I didn't say he didn't say champion. I said it.
Heard.
You know, I have a list on my board that of all these words through the COVID that I'm like, that I don't like. And my dry erase board is getting long. I'm like, championing is one of them.
Is let's circle back to that. Another one.
Oh, Jesus.
No, please don't.
Sorry.
Please.
Continue with your,
no, all I was saying is that the time of the brew pub was in the 90s, early 90s, you know, before the first bubble. And it doesn't hold, in my mind, it doesn't hold advantages. You eliminate the ability to ever distribute if you want to, and there are self-distributing laws right now that you can self-distribute. So why would you ever want to do that? Especially if you can just throw a pot still in the back and make your gin and tonics and make your whiskey and cokes and whatever on your own. So it seems kind of silly.
Wow.
So Donna in the chat just mentioned Stout Chocula. And I was going to tell you my story earlier about, so I do this thing called Operation MI Brew, where I go and visit all these different, every brewery in the state is my goal, but it's going to take me never to get that completed. But
you are going to use mibeermap.com to,
I use mibeermap.com on a regular basis. I actually used it when I was there last year for, I was in Kalamazoo for All Saints, All Stouts Day. Because it is the weekend of my birthday, which is All Saints Day. And I used Michigan Beer Map. MIBeerMap?
MIBeerMap.com.
MIBeerMap.com. I have to say it right. To find Old Peninsula. And we went there. And I fell in love with the Stout Chocula. I think it's amazing. And she just posted on here, please let Stout Chocula live on.
Well, I'm sure Stout Chocula and all of the recipes will live on, because I was never, I never hid them, and the owner has them. And from what I heard 2 weeks ago, OPIPA was already brewed at One Well. So all of the beers that people want to have are going to be brewed. Stout Chocula, however, I would say that is the coolest name I've ever come up with for a beer.
It's good.
And Post or General Mills, I think, never came after us, even though they're in Battle Creek. And that was fun.
Well, I mean, you have to be a certain age to buy one versus the other, so.
Yeah, but still, they could have been cease and desist.
I'm sure people have been cease and desist for much less, that's for sure.
That's true. We've talked about that plenty of times on this show. My goodness. You know,
by then they were probably tired of all the lawsuits.
So I mean, I'll go on, Rob.
I was going to say, just why bother having a lawsuit about a cereal? I mean,
Have you seen that story?
Yeah, I've seen it. It's
crazy.
Dumb. That's all. Go ahead, Ken.
That's quite all right. So I guess my next question is that, you know, what do you want to do now that you're no longer with Old Peninsula? Have you given any thought or credence to what the future holds? Maybe, you know, the Kiplinger Brewery?
Well, once upon a time, I did think that was actually going to be a reality. I don't think that now... Today, I don't think that's going to be an easy possibility. That time has passed, unless you have a lot of financial backing on your own too. Because if you start your own place with other people who have the money, then you can be eliminated pretty easily. The short answer to your question is the news that I heard from my boss when he told me we're no longer going to brew at Old Peninsula was on April 24th. And it was, you know, like, we don't need you anymore kind of thing. So we're only about, you know, I joke with my wife, who is an amazing psychologist, mental health person. I was like, I think I went through the five stages of grief. And she's like, you probably did. And I was there for them all. And, you know, so it's too soon for me at least, it's not even been a month to figure out what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I'm an old dude. I did 17 years there. And in my calculations, if I'm lucky, I'll have 17 more years to work until I retire, if I'm lucky, like I said, you know, no one knows.
That's so for sure. No one knows.
I think he froze.
Did he freeze?
Yeah, he did.
He froze. That's the beauty of the internet.
Yep.
Yeah, boy.
Not a good look for him over there.
No, it isn't.
I,
I was very contemplative right now.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about asking like whether or not like it bothers him that all of these recipes are now in their hands.
Which,
right.
So whose hands are they in? Are they in the former owners?
They are in the owner of One Well / Old Peninsula.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think they're going to brew some stuff still on site, but a lot of stuff is going to go to brew at One Well, which One Well does have distro. So technically, we fully lost him. So technically, One Well could brew his beers, and maybe that's a good sending away package that he's going to be able to see his beers in distro, the one thing he couldn't see for the last 17 years.
I almost feel like that would bother me too.
It would bother me.
I mean, I would think so. I think I would hope that there's some type of, you know, contingency in regards to what Old Peninsula did, but who knows what Old Peninsula can do or could do, within the situation. We're not, you know, as much as we've talked about business on this show before, we've never really gotten into the whole, rights to ownerships. Like, you know, at one point my ex worked as a pastry chef at a restaurant and had a bunch of recipes there, and sure enough, like, you know, it was a whole process to get those recipes back because they tried to keep the book. And you're like, oh no, like that's a huge thing in the restaurant world is that you keep your recipes.
Is
that a thing?
Very. People can hire you to bring in your recipes, but those are your recipes. And if they want to buy those recipes, they're more than welcome to.
Now, did she bring them in or did she come up with them while she was there?
She brought them in.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, they weren't recipes on their dime. I see where you were going with that, though.
Yeah, no, you know what I was getting. It's a good question.
That's a very, very, very fair question. Yeah, so it looks like we did lose him. I haven't gotten a message, so he might have lost the internet fully over there.
Might try to get back.
Yeah, he might try to get back, but if he doesn't, obviously we appreciate him coming in, talking to us a little bit about his long history brewing here in the state of Michigan. You know, I guess, well, we got 2 minutes left. I'm going to look over. We announced a little bit of news before we go to break. Bars and restaurants and retail is open at 50% capacity in the Upper Peninsula, as well as the Northern Lower Peninsula. Always hard to say. And then today, I believe Whitmer extended the state of emergency to June 19th, stay at home to June 12th. But there are a lot of not rules and regulations, but things, yeah, groups of 10 people. Thankfully, it's not like, did you see those other countries where like you could stick together with 8 people, but it has to be the same 8? I think we talked about the same 8 people.
We did.
there's another country that you could co-op with a family, so you could hang out with another family, and those were the two families that you are able to hang out with. But I just got a message that he is booting back up, so I'm going to take this opportunity to take a break. Guys, if you want, you can go onto your phone, to the App Store, download the Hot Mic app, HOTMIC, use the code BOD, and you can watch us live on there. The stream is a lot faster on there than it is on Facebook, but obviously everyone and their mother is on Facebook, so this is for all the cool people who don't have a Facebook, as well as those who may not want to use Facebook. But we will be right back with the Better on Draft podcast.
I'm headed for the city, trouble in my mind. Too young and pretty for things to be unkind. Time is all we have now, so let's make something while we can. I'm headed for the city to make me start again. Conversation now and then, gotta go, gotta get it. Started. to betray, make it in this life. Time is all we have now, so let's make something while we can. I'm headed for the city to make me start again. Conversation I wonder, gotta go, gotta get it. Don't make things go south, baby.
And we are back to 20 Better on Draft podcast. You can join us live each and every Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern on Facebook.com/ Better on Draft. Of course, on the Hot Mic app, if you download it, use the code BOD. Yeah. It helps us out, actually. So make sure you guys do it. Listen to Dan as he says, yeah.
Yeah. Do yeah. it.
Do it now.
Do it.
So our guest was unable to rejoin us just right now. So if he joins us, obviously we will continue. But as the show says, or as the world says, the show must go on. What are you guys drinking for round number two? We'll start with Rob.
So round two, actually double shout out, because actually since he was mentioned in the first segment, kids eat pizza and they absolutely love Hot and Ready's, despite the fact that grown-ups don't. That's
not true.
Horrible pizza.
But I was definitely making it a little bit better. So another shout out to Nick the Brewer as I was breaking out the barrel aged hoisin sauce.
Oh, I've been nice. Using that. So
oh,
much.
I love that stuff.
Making it a hell of a lot better.
I'll put it on just about anything.
Yeah, that stuff is amazing, and I was going to try to reach out to him to see if he's got any more of that stuff, because it is really good. But I have switched up, and your second shout out to Tavor, as I am breaking out from Faux Hands the peanut butter and jelly milk stout.
So they can use the code Robert Tavor. Yep. Let's go back. So I finally signed up for Tavor. And wow, do I not like any of the fucking beers that they have out there right now.
You ain't lying. It's been, and my thing is that a lot of the stuff that will show up, you'll see a IPA, 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 IPA.
Sour.
Yeah. Early
lots
wine.
Of sours.
IPA. And then there'll be that one week that'll show up where all of a sudden it's Anchorage's Endless Ending, the barley wine stout blend, or when they put up Anchorage's Deal with the Devil, which granted was selling on Tavor at $50 a can, but was selling on the secondary market. People were buying it and then selling it on the secondary market for $250.
The hell?
Yeah.
It's beer.
What? Stuff. And they have, and what's funny is like this week they have the Emerald Grouper, which when we were still doing the Tavor Tuesdays as to which Tavor beer we were going to drink on the show, that was one that we did, you know, a few like months ago, and that came back on the Tavor and it's now sold out. Hopefully,
thanks to us, obviously.
Yeah. Thanks to us. You know, I still have quite a bit of the Tavor stuff that's here in the house. So, I'm going to start trying to bring that back on Tavor Tuesdays and see if we can get some votes and figure out which beer is the one that I'm going to enjoy.
Maybe we'll reach out to Tavor and try to do something where in our Tavor packages, maybe one of the two or both the beers can get to us. Nick, what are you drinking down there?
I switched to dark beer, and I'm going with a mint double decadent from Atwater.
Oh, I tell you what, that is a bipolar beer. You either love that beer or you hate that beer, and I love that beer.
So this one is actually
so good.
This is easily one of my favorites from Atwater. This one's actually been sitting for a little bit, and it's got a lot more of that chocolate cocoa type flavor to it. Rather than the mint. Mint's mellowing out a little bit, so I get more of that cocoa chocolate.
I'm pretty sure me and Matt easily drank like 10 pints of it while we were brewing our Give Me Some Peanuts and Cracker Jacks beer for the opening day beer that opening day got canceled.
Right.
Well, it was not this year. It was the rainy day opening day.
Yeah. Real quick, just as Nick had pointed out about beers that were sitting, you remember how we had the little bit of the controversy that was going on with Oddside and how you should not age or cellar any of their beers. I was going through my stash yesterday and I found a Hipster Brunch from 2016 and just decided, you know what, the hell with it. I'll crack this thing open. There wasn't anything wrong with that thing at all. It was changed a bit, but it wasn't, you know, like what happened way back then when, you know, Maya Mocha was out there and people were saying it was turning into, you know, green apples and just being infected and all of that. So, you know, definitely shout out to Oddside, Wes and Josh and the gang over there, because, you know, that sucker held up.
Dan, what do you got over there? You still I mean, you said you were pounding that.
Yeah, I still got half the can of that Claymore left. I stopped drinking it. But I've got a Creekside Coffee Brown.
Ooh.
Delicious beer out of Arizona here from Grand Canyon.
And Wendy?
I have moved on to Ascension's new release, Dumpster Fire 2020.
Wow.
Because regardless of which side you're on, I'm pretty sure we all feel that way. It's actually pretty good. I like it. It's got some hops in it. I also have the Sensual on the Sectional that I'm looking forward to trying. I have a beer fairy that delivers to me whenever she gets some. So it's nice. Wonderful.
Oh, when she's done shipping clothing?
That is one thing that I just feel like I just came to terms with like a second ago, is that now that my travel is done with Toast, I no longer will get the opportunity to try all of these beers, which makes me upset, because now I'm lucky enough that my current company's HQ is in Houston. So I'm going to definitely have to, once I get down there to meet everyone, check it out and drink. Cause when I was in Houston this year, it was during dry January. And even with my first class upgrade over at Delta, I did not drink at all. I waited until the 29th, I think, which was the Royal Rumble. And damn, did I get drunk fast.
Damp is the way to go.
Damp, yeah. It was definitely, we see you, Dan. It was definitely not a dry January with how much I drank that Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Dan, welcome back. Let's see if we can hear you.
I think you can, hopefully.
Hey, there you are.
Perfect. Well, I was hoping you were going to come back because you mentioned Bell's, and I don't know if this beer was made while you were there, but I've got for my segment two, a Kalamazoo Stout.
What year?
Probably this year.
It wasn't made when I was there.
I mean, the beer itself, not the actual physical bottle. I don't have I don't have 18-year-old bottles of beer. I have 70-year-old bottles of beer sitting over here.
You haven't drank those yet?
I have not drank it. I have some like Stroh's and Stroh's Light and like oil cans. And of course, I'm going to pair up that Kalamazoo Stout with a Kalamazoo Stout. So that's going to be my segment too, for sure. Dan, welcome back. We appreciate it. What do you get? Oh, you still got your two-hearted?
Yeah, I'm not two-fisting like you guys.
You know, for you, you've probably drank enough, especially if you've gone to the Michigan Brewers Conference, where you drink in those 3 days more than people drink in a year.
If no you comment. Do it wrong, you do that. Yes. I'm there to learn. So I try to wait until everybody else is drunk before I have my first beer.
Really? I got taken under the wings of some people and I don't remember much.
That's why you don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, it was my first and only year. I didn't go this year. But I went in 2019 for Michigan Beer Box / Better on Draft, and sure enough, it was playing left, right, center, and I remember somebody gave me a flask, which I thought was just booze, but it was definitely THC. And yeah.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
No, what is that?
I remember passing out at 8 p.m. or so at my hotel. And then at like 4 a.m. woke up. I'm like, well, I ain't going to wait till 7 a.m. for 6 hours for the first class on that Friday. So I just drove home that day. But we appreciate you coming on back. We appreciate you chatting with us. What the first question that I kind of wanted to ask, that now that you're back, because we kind of alluded to the fact that you saw a lot. What do you think prompted the huge craft boom we've seen in the last 5 years?
The huge craft what?
Boom.
Oh,
because we've almost doubled in brewery size in 5 years.
Well, I would say that a lot of it has to do with friendly laws that have, if not encouraged, but helped small breweries get going here in Michigan. And you're talking about in Michigan, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And probably... there was a self-distribution law, I think, that was just passed recently. I'm not up on all the legislature, but I would say that there were – it's much kinder right now than it was in, like, say, the 1990s when the – I would argue the first bubble. I don't even need to argue. You know, when the first bubble of the breweries happened was in the early 90s, and it was tough on those breweries because they didn't have the means that the breweries now do. So I would say that laws were loosened and made better for them. That would be the easiest thing. Opening a brewery now doesn't require you having a 15 barrel brew system or a 7 barrel brew system. You could just have a little, you know, kettle and a pot and make small stuff. And the money that you can get for a can of beer now is not even close to what, you know, back in the early 80s, early 90s, late 80s. I mean, when Bell's was trying to not keep bringing up them, but that's what I'm familiar with. When we were trying to sell beer, you couldn't sell beer for $5 a can or $7 a can or $8 a can. There's no way. No way. So things have changed, and I think a lot of the bigger breweries have kind of, you know, pushed through and paved the way where the new generation is no longer so shocked to spend that much money. And that's what all of us were saying is like, hey, you spend $9 on a bottle of shitty wine, you can't spend $9 on a bottle of 750 milliliters of beer. You know, in two bottles worth, you know, that's essentially what it is, right? two 12-ounce bottles is a $7.50 of wine. So you can't spend $5 on a bottle of good beer. And that finally, that I think that you know, has been broken through. And
do you think that's a cultural shift within the American culture, or do you think you know, people just kind of like the quality of beer just increased that much more?
It 100% has to be a culture shift, because okay. I'm saying that quality of beer did exist back when I was a kid in the 90s. It wasn't coming from our country, but Belgium was definitely making amazing beer. They were selling way too cheap, and the quality of beer that they were making, that we're now making, you know, sours and spontaneously fermented stuff and whatever, is demanding an enormous amount of money.
Well, so for those breweries that, you know, were selling at that time, and I know we've brought up this topic before, but having someone who's kind of lived through it, seen it in a more brewing and business sense, we've seen, you know, the amount of money that goes into making a Final Absolution from Dragonmead, or a Le Fin de Mun from Unibrew. Like, those are expensively made beers with a low cost of purchase. Do you think that those breweries kind of got stuck in that price point and had to turn them into loss leaders? Or do you think those beers could, you know, you could technically raise the prices of those beers and still be okay?
Are they loss leaders? I really don't know.
I mean, based on the brewing and the amount of money you're making from the other beers that you're selling and the price that you're selling, I would assume. But I mean, like, because you can buy those beers for pretty dirt cheap, and it's not that. Is it expensive? Isn't it not? Hold on, let's not use too many negatives. Is it pricey to make a Belgian triple in comparison to a let's say a stout?
I think the expense really is in hops. I don't think it's in yeast so much. So if you run a well, you know, organized and well run brewery, yeast is almost your smallest expense, especially with, you know, when you're talking about scale, you know, bigger breweries. I think raw materials, I think the beers that actually truly are expensive are these new boutique, super hoppy, New England IPAs. I think the amount of hops that go into them are expensive. I really don't think that a Belgian triple is that expensive, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. I was saying
triples.
More triples. And we've definitely asked this question before to a lot of other brewers, and, you know, definitely, you know, shout out to Joe Walters because he absolutely hates the style. But New England IPAs, I mean, are they something that you wanted to make, or you know, just thought that, you know, this style just needs to go away?
I love that question, because I've been asked it so many times. I'll tell you this. Initially, I was like, you know, I've been a brewer since, you know, a professional brewer since like 1991, a long time. And we tried to make our beers clear without filtering them, because that was the first iteration, is like everyone filtered their beers. And like, no, we can make beers that are clear enough to drink that are not filtered. And then we just kept going on that route. And then the next generation of brewers are like, oh, we want to make all these hazy things and everything haze is good. And we're like, what? But I mean, to be a good brewer, you need to adapt. And I saw it and I realized that it was something I wasn't familiar with. So instead of hating it, I just drank it and I tried to understand it. And I realized as I understood it more, that the haze wasn't actually the thing. The haze was a consequence of the thing. the thing being the flavor that you're after. Jeez. So when you're putting the oats in there, when you're putting these different yeasts, these English yeast that you just get hazy beer because of the flavor you're after. And once I realized that, I embraced it. I made Mr. Smushy down at Old Peninsula, and I loved doing it. And I only made my second batch. I was like just tuning it in right before I was, you know, let go. So I'm going to
continue. That's actually an amazing name too.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Just saying.
So I assume you were the name creator of all your beers over at Old Peninsula.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes, actually very much.
We've always talked about the hazy IPAs because we are a show that was pre-haze craze in the state. Like, we predate M43 on our show, so much so that we had the first batch of M43 on our show.
We had it before it was out in the public.
And it's just such an interesting thing for me to see where I think everyone that we kind of talked about in that whole diatribe, Joe Walters, like everyone made a hazy IPA because you had to be business smart. That was a beer that sells. And look at Baffin. Baffin's number one seller prior to Wicked Smot was Mango Unchained. And then the second they made a New England IPA, it sold like hotcakes. And I think, one, it's a decent style of beer for a lot of people to get into beer a little bit more.
It's
because
good for the hop timid.
Yeah. I mean, there's some just hop aggressive hazy IPAs that I can't even stand. But I even have, like, I've got B43 in my fridge right behind me, which is a brute hazy IPA. Like, the amount Matt of that. What's that?
Don't tell Matt that.
I mean, it's a keto beer, so I have to have it.
Bingo square.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought we said that was a free space.
That might be a free space. I guess I was thinking, because I was channeling Joe, because I remember when we had him on the show that, you know, while it's the it style and it's the beer that a lot of people want, and just like you said, that it may be kind of like the starter beer to get people into the craft beer scene. But from a teaching standpoint, when Joe was talking about being at Schoolcraft and how he hated the style because everything that he tried to teach in the classes of teaching people how to make beer would go completely in the other direction in trying to make a hazy, because it would go against everything that he was teaching and everything that he was taught on how to make beer.
Well, here's a question that I want to bring to Dan, because let's bring up Joe, and I'm going to match you with Travis Fritz over here, over at Old Nation. And these guys are true to style brewers. And, you know, Dan, I saw 4 years ago a lot of the beers you're making, throwing ghost pepper, peanut butter, and 800 other adjuncts into a beer is not necessarily true to style. What made you so timid towards hazy IPAs?
Travis and I are actually buddies, and I did talk with him. We were next to each other at the Winter Beer Festival 2 years ago, and I wasn't timid toward that. I'll tell you this, and I'll tell you this seriously. I have a big problem as a brewer. I don't like bandwagons, and I don't like to follow them. And I try to cut my own way, and I refuse to do anything that anybody else has done before. So yes, I was dragged kicking and screaming into this New England thing. I threw hot peppers into beers. I threw wood into beers, wood that no one has ever used before into beers. And that was, you know, that was all I could do down there. It was a 7-barrel brew pub. I had 3 fermenters and a 7-barrel brewery from the 90s. I mean, there was not much that I could do as far as technology. So I had to do stuff like that. But what drew me to that, I guess, you know, it might've been Travis. Just, hey, people love this stuff. We talked. I was like, really? Really? You brew the best stylistic German beers and you're doing this? And he's like, yeah, that's what they want. I was like, ultimately, I guess that's it. You know, we're here to serve the people. I think I said that when I started this whole entire thing. I'm here for the people. So I was like, what the hell? I'll give it a shot. And when I made my first iteration, I brought it up there, and Nate's a buddy of mine, and I brought it to him and let him try it. And it was fun. It was a fun kind of, it wasn't a collaboration, but it was a fun, like getting a chance to hang out with him and try what they were doing. And, yeah, you just gotta gotta ebb and flow. You can't be all, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, because that's not the way that beer is right now. And that's not the way that people are right now. And you got to brew for the people.
So I got two follow-up questions. One, because obviously I have to be curious, how did the New England sell over at your brew pub?
It did well. In Kalamazoo, I've said this before, Old Peninsula was always looked at as kind of like the thing that didn't have that good a beer. But when we had some people who actually knew what was up, kind of thing, you know, it sold well. It's a tough situation because we don't distribute it. They didn't have a good rep. They possibly didn't do things well to get a good reputation for beer. It was more about the restaurant. But the people who knew, yeah, Mr. Smushy was flying well. And I really liked the fact that, yes, it was a good name. and it was a good beer. I had a keg on tap when I left there. I had it here and it was gone, and I was very disappointed. So that's one of the beers that I'm looking forward to brewing on my own to fill my keg fridge back up.
We were kind of talking about it right after you left, and I guess this is a question that's I'm gonna be asked to you, because you know we know a little bit about, you know, laws and those the things that happen. Are you able to keep any of those recipes and use them at another brewery, or are they owned by Old Peninsula?
All the recipes I created, but they own them, I guess, but. In the brewing world, it means nothing.
Okay.
I mean, seriously, what do I do? Add an ounce of hops here and
who's going to see you couple, if you make it?
Yeah. I mean, it's unenforceable at best, and you have to adjust your recipes every time you get new hops anyway. The alpha acids are different, right? You're not going to make the exact same beer every time. So, a real fun analogy that I've been telling my friends, because everybody's been asking me that. They're like, you're gone. What about your recipes? I'm like, it doesn't matter. If you stumbled across the directions on how to fly the space shuttle, it doesn't mean you can fly the space shuttle.
That's true.
Good point.
You got to know what you're doing. So, you know, brewing techniques matters way more than something written on a piece of paper. So that's all I have to say about that.
I think, yeah, just as I think about that, it's like, how can somebody come after you for a beer that tastes like theirs? I mean, it just seems like the most part of what we see about C&Ds are about how beers are named, not necessarily how they taste. So, I mean, you got McDonald's on one side and you're making McDowell's. You got
America.
Mick.
It really is about marketing. It's not
about...
You got
the Big Mac, we got the Big Mick.
Exactly. Got them golden arcs? Or what you...
He doesn't have sesame seeds. I mean, that's basically it right there.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm curious, and I think we're going to have to maybe do a, not necessarily a half episode, but a
Three-quarter episode.
Yeah, something like that. Because I looked it up, and I'm like, you know, I wonder if anybody's ever sued it. And, you know, there are some very sue-happy breweries out there who sue a lot. I won't say, like, Sam from Dogfish Head's name a lot, but... you know, there are breweries who do sue, but really the only thing I saw, and this is a huge thing, is that Anheuser-Busch InBev claims MillerCoors stole secret beer recipes. And Jesus. I mean, that's
secret about their beer recipes.
Why would you want to?
I mean, it's still the top selling beers in the country.
They don't fucking make Dr. Pepper.
What are they going to do? Are they going to go into the facility and see it?
I actually, years ago, we're talking probably 10 years ago maybe, I interviewed for Coca-Cola over in Detroit. And they were talking about how, like, you know, the Coca-Cola recipes in, like, this lockbox in Georgia. And nobody has the ability to do it. And everything comes from the Georgia... syrup facility that makes the syrup and then sends it off to Coca-Cola across the world for them to make
the bottling facilities and whatnot.
Well, yeah, doesn't like the KFC recipe, no one person knows the whole thing.
Well, it's 11 herbs and spices, and if you go on their Twitter, they follow 11 people, or sorry, 6 people named Herb and the 5 Spice Girls.
Yep.
That's the 11.
That's the KFC.
Is it? 6 men named Herb and 5 Spice Girls.
Watched that story the same week that I watched the cereal story. I'm just pointing that out.
So, Dan, what have you been doing during this lockdown? Obviously, you were brewing a little bit. What's keeping you moving? You were talking about we were talking on Facebook. Sawdust, you were cutting stuff.
Oh well, I was just talking with you about that. Yeah, I cut some limbs down. I've only made 2 posts on Facebook in the last month because I really have tried to stay away from that. Facebook is a depressing place for people who, you know, I hate to say this, but the old adage, you know, keep quiet and make sure, or what is it? Like, keep quiet and
shut the fuck up.
Not let them know that you're dumb or open up your mouth and then remove it out. Yeah, it's just like, I'm just trying to keep my family safe, my kid. He's turning 13, so he's right at that age, and and he's home, and we're trying to do things, and so yeah, I had sawdust all over myself because I was cutting over here, cutting some limbs down and trying to make trying to do whatever I can, but yeah, it's been a tough couple months for me. I didn't know where I was and what was happening, and things kind of shook out. So I had a chance to really think about, you know, how many awesome memories I had at Old Peninsula, and that was fun too. So
I think one of the big takeaways here is that, you know, from people who I've talked to about you, a lot of people have said you will find a job when you want to find a job. It will just happen. I think there are a lot of breweries that will want someone with your integrity as well as capabilities, as well as, you know, to be honest. And here's the thing I talked about, listening to you talk about beer and the way you present yourself, you know, you would be an amazing teacher for someone who would want to learn how to brew. And as much as that might not be the path that you want to choose, I would listen to you talk about beer. So take that for what it is.
Thank you.
But we had a few people. We're about to end the show a little bit. We had a few people that were saying hi to you. Brett Koonin, I'm guessing of the Koonin Brewery. Yeah, I was layering that sarcasm.
Thank you for the white devil.
He says hi. We also had Stephanie Fisher. I'm assuming because that's Dan.
It's not me, but
the big machine, Dan.
Garrett Krogh says, "Yay, Dan! If anyone knows how to brew a great beer, it's this guy."
Hey, he's the one who I worked with his coffee. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So, Dan, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Obviously, we know you'll land somewhere here soon, and we'll be the first to break it here on Better on Draft. But that's going to do it. Do you have any further messages you want to send out to the internet, the craft beer Michigan fan base?
Absolutely, I do. Buy the cans that have this on them. What you, well, of course, if it's a blog, you know, the craft beer, you buy
the independent
craft beer that is owned locally. Do not fall into that pattern of
so what of you're other saying stuff. is buy all beer made in Michigan except Founders.
Buy all Michigan beer that is actually owned in Michigan. Yes.
It's a way to put it. Dan, thank
you. No Charlotte Street Brewing.
Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Again, you can find us facebook.com/betteronDraft. You can find us on Hot Mic. Use the code BOD to watch us live. We are going to end this specific stream. Come off Hot Mic. We're going to go back onto Facebook because the delay is about 35 seconds from Better on Draft to Hot Mic to Facebook. So we'll cut that out. Don't forget to check out our sponsors, Zatuna Liquor over in Rochester Hills, North Center Brewing over in Northville, Michigan. Dan with his little Zatuna.
I just keep it here now.
Is that a prowler or is that a that's a prowler.
Yeah.
Prowler. Very cool.
Prowler, 16-ounce bottle. That's I learned about those when Drafting Table started them because people did not want their shift drinks and they still wanted their shift drinks. So Drafting Table's like, well, how about we give you a glass to take home and you can have your shift drink whenever you want. There you
go. I still got mine from Terra Firma still somewhere in this house.
Can I interject?
Of course.
Yeah.
Howler, growler, crowler. Those all seem to be like words like Bradgelina. Like, come on, it was a growler to begin with.
Howlers, like meowlers.
Like use the other front letter.
We need to figure out a way to get a 120-ouncer and call it like a big owler.
Oh, gosh.
Big ass.
Or hold on, a BOD owler, a bot owler, because whatever you think of your beer, we think it's Better on Draft. Have a good night.
Hey, Auntie.
All right. Thank you, everybody.